What if letting go was what you needed to do in order to grow your business? What if you needed to get out of the way of the current that you've created? These are just a few of the topics that my good friend, Mr. Chris Chico, and I are going to be talking about on today's episode number 498. We're going to be talking about marketing, what's working and what's not working. We're going to be talking about specifically SMS, text message marketing, some of the challenges that are currently going on right now when it comes to SMS marketing. So if you're somebody who is leveraging and tapping into that channel, or if you're thinking about it, this is definitely something you're going to want to hear. Chico shares his thoughts on, you know, what's the type of marketing that we need to be thinking about? What direction do we need to be going in as we continue to get, you know, we're operating in certain hot markets or things get more competitive. We talk about the different models that you can approach this business under, right? So what's the best model for you? And then we talk about, you know, we talk about scaling lifestyle business and which is there a right or wrong, which is best for you, how to figure that out, how to determine that. So we have a fun conversation. I want to invite you to listen in on episode 498 here.
You're listening to Flip Empire, the show committed to helping real estate entrepreneurs who want to build their empire without sacrificing their life. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Welcome back, my friends, to the Flip Empire Show. And, you know, I always say I'm excited and I'm looking forward to hopping on here. And I genuinely mean that. This one's a little different. This one is extra special because I feel like I have a very, very close friend of mine on the show. Somebody who has now probably broken the record for number of times, number of appearances, my man, on the Flip Empire Show. And this, as you can tell, yes, if you happen to be watching the video, is the highlight of his illustrious career. He's even shedding it.
I'd like to thank everyone who made this possible. My family, my mom, you know, who beat me when I did something wrong and who taught me all the way. So thank you for that.
Oh, man. But no, in all seriousness, man, it's you know, I remember back to the beginning of 2016, I was walking in a park and I was having a conversation with Chico here, and he was encouraging me to start a podcast. I had been telling him that I was thinking of, yep, this is true. You encouraged me, dude.
Oh, I didn't know that. Look at that.
No, but seriously, man, I to this day, it's one of those conversations I remember. I'm like, man, I'm thinking of starting a podcast, and you were like encouraging me. I think you should do it. And here we are basically 5 years later, and this is like your 27th time on the show. So
wow, that's amazing that I've ruined your life that long ago. Wow, that's amazing. So I know, all kidding aside, you know, it's almost Pardo and I hang out all the time, and so the only thing missing from here, and we are going to be discussing some things that everybody here is going to be interested in. But the only negative is that we don't get to share a margarita together. But maybe we will soon.
This is very true. So I was hanging out with Chico and his beautiful family out in Gatlinburg about a month and a half ago. We had a great time, but enough of that. Let's kind of get into why people are listening to us. Maybe people are watching us. You know, I want to get into not so much your background, because, you know, if you've been around or if you've been involved in the real estate investing space for even a little bit, you've probably heard Chris Chico. Many refer to him, you know, back in the day, the godfather of virtual wholesaling. And he was the one that kind of brought that to market. And now, you know, everybody's out there talking about it. So you have the unique situation and circumstance where you have a behind the scenes, behind the curtains look into a lot of investors' businesses. You work with a lot of successful investors. I'm curious what you're seeing now, 2021. What are you seeing is working? And then where do you see people kind of struggling and failing?
Yeah, I guess the question, there's always, I guess, do we want to get into, and I know we talked about this. We talked about you want to talk about some of the landmines that I see right now that then, because there's a bit of an issue here coming up with SMS marketing, which a lot of people are doing. So just to give everybody a frame of reference. So I used to do a lot of direct mail. So that was my thing that I pioneered and I did a lot of over many years. Direct mail started to not do as well. The cost per lead started to increase. The cost per deal started to increase. And just because there was more and more people in the wholesaling market. So then I transitioned to digital marketing, and specifically Facebook, because at the time nobody was doing Facebook. And as always, you know, every marketing channel changes, but we're still continuing to generate leads. And that's what I predominantly teach students, how to get on board with Facebook and how to go ahead and get started. A lot of my clients, a lot of the students that get involved with us, they come because they're already doing, you know, outbound. They're doing cold calling. Maybe they're doing SMS, and either maybe they are having success or not. So sometimes if somebody is having success, they also want to implement maybe a marketing strategy that's inbound. So as opposed to, you know, going out and spending time actually reaching out to people. And sometimes they just don't like the cold calling. The couple of things that we spoke about right before is kind of a lay of the land is that one of the key issues coming up in terms of right now, and I think everybody who's doing SMS should be well aware of this, is that there's some changes happening with the carriers, right? So broad scope, what we'll cover in, we can also cover what's working with Facebook right now, but maybe should I cover the SMS first and then the Facebook, or which one do you want me to cover first?
No, let's get into the SMS stuff because, you know, for a long time, that was one of our main marketing channels that was, but now it seems like it's everybody's doing it. And I know that there's some, there's a trickle down effect and it's causing some backlash here. So there's a lot of people listening to this that are likely doing SMS marketing and they may or may not be aware of some of the changes and some of the challenges going on with that particular channel. So yeah, let's dive into that.
Yeah. So the main thing with SMS, as with any channel, you know, cause the same thing happened with direct mail is that, you know, the more people do it, the more crowded it gets. And then, you know, unlike direct mail, where, you know, the post office isn't going to complain that you're sending too much mail because they love it because it keeps them in business. What's happening now is that the carriers are getting a lot of volume of these text messages. And some of the carriers like the AT&T, now when you get a text message and they don't think it's really an individual from your phone, then they'll put it in a different category. Samsung will put it as a spam. I think for iPhone, they put it in a different category. But what's happening now is that the carriers are now going to really clamp down on that. So they're going to require, each carrier is going to require a business registration. So depending on how you're doing it, you know, it typically most of you that are doing any sort of SMS where you're using a platform, that platform will likely do the registration and help you with that. Hopefully, if that would be better for you. But every single carrier, AT&T, Verizon, and everybody is going to require your business registration. So you can, you know, you can't just be behind the shadows. Then they also want you to register the campaign. And then also I had a conversation with a friend of mine who actually operates one of the platforms. I'm not going to say who it is, but who operates one of the platforms that you guys know that you sign up for to be able to send mass text messages. And one of the issues is the throttling. In other words, that you might go ahead and register your campaign, but they're just not going to let you send out, you know, hundreds of thousands of texts a month, you know, because of the fact that they want to see, hey, is what you're sending what people want? Is it unsolicited? And then if not, then they're going to clamp down on it. So one thing to keep, and so all this is to say that, you know, I think for anybody here who has SMS as their primary strategy for them going out and getting deals, you know, for right now, continue to do it, continue to fine tune it, continue to work with the issues around there and try to do whatever you can to work around it. But I think it makes sense for you to start looking at, hey, what else can I implement into the mix? So that way, if I can't send, you know, because SMS is a volume game. So the biggest issue is that if you're not able to send the volume of SMS that you're typically used to sending out to get the number of deals, then maybe you will still be able to send the SMS, but now you have to pick up the rest of the slack from other sources. So that's, I don't know if you had any comments about that specifically, but that's just something new that just, you know, I heard over the last week.
Yeah. So is there anything in particular that you're aware of, Chico, that people that are currently doing SMS marketing, is there anything that they can do to protect themselves while still gain the benefits of mass SMS? Like, are there any best practices or strategies as far as, like, for example, you know, dripping the amount of messages that go out over the course of the day or over the course of the week versus like sending them out in bulk? Or like, I'm just curious if there's anything that people can do to still gain the benefits of SMS marketing while protecting themselves.
Well, I mean, I think from what I read, that the registration is so it doesn't matter if you hire a VA, you know, with these platforms, you hire a VA, typically you put all the numbers in the platform and then you're not sending them. You're not allowed to just hit a button and just send a bunch of texts. You have to do them individually, you know, by hand. And that kind of circumvents, you know, the laws and the requirements. The registration is going to be the case regardless if you're doing that or even if you have drip campaigns. So even your drip campaigns would have to be registered, right, in terms of that. So like it covers everything. I think that, you know, in the SMS world, you know, we're technically kind of going under the radar because you're not offering a service. So like a real estate agent would definitely have an issue with sending out mass SMS because of the fact that they're soliciting for a service. But we're kind of reaching out to people, asking them if they want to buy the house. However, the thing to also consider with SMS is that you always got to be careful, because nowadays, if you go on Google, you can find tons of attorneys that are basically looking for clients that got an unsolicited text so they can go ahead and file a lawsuit against you, and then you're going to settle and collect, and they're going to collect like 10 grand from you. That's so, right. You know, so SMS is always like a cat and mouse game. So I think you have to be mindful of that, you know, it's like I was telling somebody the other day, it's like robbing banks. I don't rob banks. But if you rob banks for a living, you can't complain about always getting shot at by the cops. They're going to be like, it's just, if you rob banks, you always have to deal with that, right? So it's kind of like the thing you always have to deal with when it comes to SMS. But I just think that it's just going to make it a little bit tougher. So that way, if you're playing the volume game, I don't think you're going to be able to play the volume game to the extent that you were playing before.
Right. And here's the big picture, you know, if you are relying on one marketing channel, whether it's SMS marketing or anything else for that matter, your business is built on a house of cards, right? Chico, you and I, not too long ago, were having a conversation. We don't get, obviously, don't need to get into the specifics of that, but we know several people that, you know, one particular channel is disrupted in some way, shape, or form, whether it's an online platform or whether it's something like what we're talking about now with SMS. And then you have to kind of scramble and you kind of have to figure things out. And I think you can put yourself in a very precarious position if you're only relying on one marketing channel. So with that as the backdrop, like, talk to us about what you are seeing working from a lead gen perspective and from a marketing perspective now.
I'm just talking to another friend of mine that just, I think he has like 10 deals right now pending or even more. He just signed 3 assignments and is going to make between the 3 assignments, $65,000 between them. And he's still using SMS, but for him, PPC is working well. SEO is also working well, although SEO is more of a long tail thing. I think SEO is something that you're going to start and you're going to look at it more as a long-term play, right? So you're not looking at that channel as a way to generate leads rather quickly, but rather just you're setting that foundation so that, you know, 6 months, 8 months down the line, you're going to start to reap the benefit of that. The challenge with PPC is just if you're doing it locally, then there's a couple challenges. So let me go back. So PPC is one of them, all right? Cold calling, there's still quite a few people that are still doing cold calling. And, you know, but with PPC, the challenge with PPC is that the cost per lead is really relatively high. If you spread out and go nationwide, Google still needs for you to run a certain amount of money so that it can kind of understand your prospect and then be able to get the cost per lead down. So you still have to spend quite a bit of money. And it's also kind of a complicated channel. You know, Google is the one that will take your money very aggressively if you don't know what you're doing and will not give it back. So with Facebook, the thing like Facebook, we're still running ads, we're still getting clients. As with any platform, you know, every platform has its plus and minuses. You know, with PPC, they're clicking on your ad and they're clicking probably 3 or 4 other ads. So timing is really important. You got to get at them because they're in that mode of trying to find somebody, and typically whoever gets to them first is the one that has the upper hand. With Facebook is a little bit different because it's interruption driven, so they may not be out there looking for a solution. They happen to see your ad and it catches their attention, they'll submit their information, but they're not going out there and submitting their information. The downside is that the cost per lead is going to be low, but you're going to have more breakage, meaning that you're going to have a certain number of leads that you're going to get ghosted on, that you're going to have to just be after them in order to get them on the phone. We just had a client that just posted, he did a deal for $46,000, but you know, he had been trying to get a hold of that seller for months, and finally he got a hold of that seller. And you know, cause I always say that, you know, a seller, your motivation to find a house is at a 10. Every day you're going out there looking to find a house. So a seller's motivation may be a 5 today, but maybe they got caught up in their lives. And then now, you know, they got other things that they're, you know, have to worry about. And so now their motivation for this week is a 1. And so you're after them, you're trying to get a hold of them, but they don't care. Their other issues in life are really what's important. But if you continue to follow up with them, at some point their motivation rises to close to yours, and now you connect. I don't want to paint the picture that, oh my gosh, that Facebook is like so, you know, it's the miracle, it's the unicorn that you're going to hop on, and it's going to poop money every time you hop on it, that kind of deal. I think every platform has its pluses and minuses that you have sure. to, and the nuances that you have to deal with. And then the other thing I mentioned right before that we started is that I hadn't done direct mail in a very, very long time.
And which is ironic because when you got started 2 decades ago or so, like, man, I feel like I still to this day, Chico, you know, see your pieces, your copywriting yes. floating around. I mean, it's been just, I don't know. Can I say hoard out? Is that the right word to use?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. The third notice card. Every time I see the third notice card somewhere. I did a version of that. So I went ahead and everything, you know, everybody's hot and heavy with cold calling right now, because that's the one that people find it the easiest to get involved with, lowest cost, and then they can kind of use their sweat equity in order to generate leads. A lot of people have moved away from direct mail, and so actually, I'll give you guys the update. But I just mailed a small campaign in Miami using PropStream data, and just sent out a postcard. And it is a dicey postcard because that's all I set up. I mean, dicey is that, you know, back in the days before there was any sort of any sort of skip tracing, what we used to do is we used to just send like a third notice postcard with an 800 number, and the whole purpose of them was for them to call the number. And then once they called the number, then we had their number, and now we can then call them back. That was kind of our way of skip tracing back then before it came out. Right. And so it is a similar type of format. So it's either going to work well, or I'm going to get a lot of hate. I'll tell you a funny story. We used to send the property notification postcards. One day we made the mistake of sending it to code violations in Miami. Do you know who we got a call from? We got a call from the code violation department in Miami because the postcard was so freaked out everybody that they were calling the code department and asking them, you know, like in panic. And then they're like, I don't understand. We didn't send you any letters. We didn't send you any postcards. They told them. And then finally the code, called the numbers. They're like, we need someone to call us, please, ASAP.
Is that the piece, Chico, that you showed me when we had lunch like 2-3 years ago that it looked very official? It looked yes. like, dude, you come up with some creative yes. stuff. And I remember one time you shared with me a piece that like you hadn't really put out there. And you kind of warned me. And I remember that piece got us like 14 to 16% response rate. And like our phones were going like bananas.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the end, you ended up just, there was too many calls. And then you ended up just not even calling everybody back. You gave up on it.
I hate to say we gave up on it. But it was a lot, man. We were completely.
Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah.
Having said that, I remember we squeezed out a couple deals from it. Yeah. But back to your point, it's all in the follow-up. If you're expecting to turn on a marketing channel and just connect with them once or twice, I mean, you're leaving, I think, 99% of the money on the table.
Yeah, I mean, that postcard, so if anybody know, like, if you look at the there's those postcards that you may have seen that say on the top, third notice, property notice, final notice. Those postcards are really great for a very specific list, right? Because you know who they are, you know that there's some motivation, potentially like an absentee owner, and then you're trying to get them to raise their hands. Like, that postcard doesn't work at all with older people that you're targeting, you know, anybody who owns a home, you know, over the age of 55, you're going to freak them out, and they're going to get calls from them. You're going to get calls from their relatives. And trust me, I know that. But I'm just sending out. I'm testing out a new campaign on direct mail. And again, I think that's because I don't think that everybody forgot about direct mail. And so as things, you know, as people migrate toward one channel, sometimes they forget about another channel. And so for me, but in general, it's what I'm seeing right now is, and again, my filter is, keep in mind as I'm doing digital marketing, is PPC, SEO, cold calling still works. I think that the negative with cold calling is people just don't like it. I mean, it is what it is, right? But I know quite a few people that make money for cold calling. But I think, you know, the SMS is one that is going to be dicey, and one for if you're not doing that, then I would say think about what else maybe you can add to the mix.
Yeah.
And maybe the question to you is, because you have a mastermind that has a lot of real estate investors, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would ask the question to you is that, what do you see? Like, I'll give you an example. There's another, I don't want to say who it is, but like, there was another mastermind that I'm kind of belong to. And then I was looking at their group, and a lot of people were doing direct mail in the month of December. And they were having horrible results. I'm talking about mailing 18,000 postcards and getting like 10 calls, like that kind of result.
Right.
So you know, I'm trying certain things, but you know, with every marketing channel, you know, you always got to keep in mind is that it's specific to that market. There's a lot of variables, the list, what postcard you're sending. And so, you know, as with anything, you're always going to test in small batches. But the question I have for you is, what do you see of the people that are in your group? What do you see that's working for them right now? Or what do you see that potentially they're struggling with right now?
Yeah, I can tell you this. And I've had, you know, so usually I do my coaching calls with our members on Thursdays. And I just had a call yesterday. We have a member north of the border. I'll leave it there. Just had a $500,000 month in revenue.
$500,000 a month. Okay.
$500,000. Now, 70% of those were wholesale. And I think it was one rehab. And it wasn't like a $300,000 rehab or anything like that. And he's doing it 100%, Chico, PPC.
PPC. Okay.
100% of the deals came from PPC. Now, he may be the anomaly. He probably is. And by the way, I'm almost hesitant to even throw out astronomical numbers like $500,000 months because that's not normal, right? Like I don't know very many people that ever accomplished that. And so I don't want you to think PPC is like the golden goose, right? But for him, you know, he's in a very particular market where he's got it really dialed in. And I know your next question.
He's targeting a specific area, right?
Correct. Right. Yeah, he's targeting a specific area. And he's been in that area. He's been in business a long time. People know him. So like, you know, there's those types of benefits that come from that as well. But a lot of our members are cold calling, SMS, and not a whole lot of direct mail, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that you brought up zigging when you didn't say this, but, you know, zig when other people zag.
Yeah.
I tend to believe, my opinion, tell me, feel free to push back on this if you have a different take. I think the more competitive it gets amongst real estate investors, especially in hot markets, the more effective the old school kind of what are considered antiquated methods of marketing will work. Let me give you an example. I was on a mastermind call, and the whole conversation came up about, have you guys happened to check the Penny Saver or the newspaper lately? And I realized the newspaper is like a dying thing. But one of the guys in our market was sharing that he could not find one real estate investor ad in the classified section of the newspaper or Penny Saver. Who do you hear talking about? When I got started in 05, dude, it was door knocking, it was direct mail, and it was putting ads in the paper.
Yeah.
Those are my three main marketing channels. I wonder if with all the eyeballs and attention on the SMS marketing channels of the world and cold calling and all that, and nobody paying attention to your point, direct mail, you know, to a much bigger scale. Nobody's paying attention to like placing ads in the paper or just doing things like that. Even door knocking. I remember I was a part of a pretty high level mastermind, and the conversation started to shift. How do we start to like automate or scale a team of door knockers? You know, and then COVID happened, and obviously, you know, that kind of went in the tank. But it just gets me to thinking, if everybody's doing this, how can you kind of shift and go in a different direction from a marketing perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it same way, maybe a slightly different filter. I look at it from the perspective of how easy it is to get into that, right? So, for example, when I was doing direct mail, when I first started, there were no direct mail vendors. Like, it was very difficult to get a list. It was difficult to do the postcards in the way that I, you know, back then, I was the one that was, there were no mail houses that, say, now it's commonplace where the postcard could have the owner's information, property address, and their name, and so make it look personal. But back then, there was none of that. And so I was doing direct mail, and nobody else was doing it that way. You know, I think, like, certain channels are crowded, because of the ease of upon which somebody could get into that. So you could easily go in and sign up for a list service, get the list, skip trace it, and then start calling. That's very easy. Direct mail has its barrier of entry because there's a postcard. You got to get the list right. Then, you know, it's also going to be expensive, you know, so you can't just, you know, you have to test enough. So that's a barrier to entry with that channel. And I think that, I think that people have forgotten about it, number one, but I think it's also people are scared of it. You know, it is scary to think that, oh, I'm going to just take out my credit card and spend $1,000 to $1,500 on a mailer and not know, like, you know, there's a bit of a lack of control, right? And if you don't get it right, then you're not going to get any calls. So you only, you know, and then now you've lost your budget. So I think there's a barrier to entry. Like PPC has a barrier to entry, even though you might see a lot of people doing PPC, you know, there's a fine line between doing it and doing it right. And 100%. So there's a high cost per lead. So that's a barrier to entry. I think your guy has a barrier to entry from the standpoint of if you know that market and you like know, like, hey, I know if I pick this up at this price, I can wholesale it for this and you have your buyers, then that also gives you an advantage, right? Because then local, you're able to do things that other people are not able to do. I was also thinking about, you know, just demographically, like I was thinking about, like somebody mentioned to me the other day that they were, this is a company is trying to sell, they were trying to sell gun equipment or gun paraphernalia, whatever. But they can't advertise, you know, on Facebook or any of those channels because they don't allow those type of advertisements. But they found out that people who own mobile homes or the big motor homes, most of them are gun owners. And so then now they're like, oh, we can get to them. And then sideways put our stuff in it. So when you talk about the Penny Saver, I always think about demographics. Who's reading the Penny Saver? The old, you know, somebody older, not the new people. And that's our demographic. Those are the people we buy houses from.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah. Dude, I'm curious your take on, before we kind of hop off the marketing topic, what are your thoughts on content marketing specifically for real estate investors that are working direct to seller? You know, you just talked about the demographics of older people. Content marketing, I find, works great, you know, in the information marketing world, right? When you want to attract, coaching clients or an audience. What are your thoughts on content marketing targeted at like the older demographic that may have a pain point or a real estate challenge that they're trying to solve?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, it's tricky because content marketing, the challenge that we have with real estate investing is that unlike, let's say, if I have a yoga studio and I'm doing content marketing, And Pardo likes yoga, chances are he's like yoga for a bit. He's going to like yoga for, you know, for a couple years until he finds something else maybe that he likes better. But there's an enduring interest. Like he has that interest for a particular period of time. You know, the challenge that sometimes we have with our customers is that the time period upon which that their need to sell a house is a very small, it's a very finite window, right? It's not, you know, it's not a window that extends out for any length of period of time. There's a couple of ways. So to me, I think that's content marketing many times is tougher for us than your typical information marketer. The thing I was thinking about is having a conversation yesterday with, I look at it more of, and this is something I'm testing. I was talking to somebody the other day, yesterday, who does TV advertising. And so TV advertising is you're getting your a commercial in front of somebody demographically, so based on the news station, and then what you're doing is then you're just showing the ads in an effort to try to get somebody's attention that says, "Hey, I'm interested in selling my house." So I asked the guy, how much they're paying for that, and what he said they were paying about $5 to $10 CPM, and what that means is that. A $10 CPM means for every 1,000 people for every 1,000 times that they show the commercial, then they're going to go ahead and charge you $10, right? That's how that works. So then I was translating that to Facebook. So whenever we're doing campaigns that we're telling Facebook, hey, I want to go out and go after a lead. I wanted somebody who's, they're going to charge us the most amount of money for that. So typically with those campaigns, they're going to charge us $30 a CPM. Why? Because we're using their data. Like in essence, for us, we're telling Facebook, hey, I want you to give me people that are predisposed to maybe potentially sell their house at a discount. Then they're going to say, we'll give you those people, but we're going to charge you money because we have all this data that now you're using and everybody wants to target based on those demographics. And so we're going to charge you a lot of money. However, there's a tweak to the, and this is something I'm testing and you guys can test as well, but you can change the way you target on Facebook to say a reach campaign or a traffic campaign. But when you do that, now it brings the cost of how much they charge you to the cost of TV. So now you're paying not what you're paying for a lead conversion at, which is $30, but you're paying what you would pay a TV station, which is like seven. You know, I saw a campaign that I had today, $7 CPM. So then now what we're testing is not necessarily content marketing in the way that you would approach like a info marketing, where hey, I'm going to show you content, you're going to watch a certain percentage of my video, and then you're going to then I know you like my stuff, so then I'm going to show you more ads. But more of approaching it from as if it was a TV station, because the phone is the TV station. So if it was a TV station, how can I get the most eyeballs in my geographic region and such that then now I have a chance of getting that lead. So that's how I just that's a long winded answer to you. Content marketing. I've tried content marketing in the info style way, and I haven't had success with it. So this is another thing that we're testing just to see if we can get some track, maybe get more leads that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Right. And you know, one thing I do want to share with people, and Chico, hopefully you don't mind me sharing this. You and I connected on a deal last year. We did a venture. You know, one of the things you guys can do is focus in on what you guys are good at. So if you're good at talking to sellers and you enjoy that and you like that, but maybe you suck at marketing, or maybe you're just not good at lead gen, find somebody locally in your market that can generate the leads for you and then work something out with that person, right? So there's, before we started recording, Chico, you and I were talking about like, there's like two or three different models out there. There's probably more than that, but there's two or three main ways that you can kind of approach this business. You want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so I've always, the model, there's the three models, right? One model is, you're just starting out and you're doing everything. You're doing the marketing, you're talking with the sellers. And I think everybody kind of starts in that way. Then eventually now you hit a point where now you want to do more. And so then there's the model of scaling. You know, you're going out and hiring acquisitions, disposition, and you're hiring all these things. And so obviously you're scaling to do more deals. And you're going to have a decrease in margins, obviously, because of that. But you're hoping to get over the hump. And then in the end, you're going to build this big business. So the thing is that, and I have always done a kind of a hybrid model. When I first started in real estate investing, I started with the postcards, and then I got them to work. And within 6 months, I was like, I can't deal with these people. I cannot talk to any more of these sellers. And so what I ended up doing, and this is before there were acquisitions managers, I had like three buddies of mine, and I'm like, look, I can do the marketing, I can generate the leads. I in no way want to talk to any of these people. I'll train you. You talk to them, you do everything, and then we'll split the deals. And so that's how the majority of my deals were being done. And even then, you know, over the last couple of years, predominantly, that's how I've always done my deals. And so going back to that, now that model was a lot easier back then with direct mail because nobody was doing direct mail. The costs were relatively low. And so that model is very much dependent on how you know how much you're going to spend in order to get a deal, and then the two numbers is how much you can spend to get a deal, and then how much is the money that you can make on an assignment. So like an example, the deal that you and I did, it was a 15K deal, and then I made $5,000, and then I think on that particular campaign, I spent $800. So that was good money, but I didn't have to deal with anything. Pardo and his team dealt with that. And that deal was a hairy deal because there was a whole bunch of issues on that
very
deal.
Very hairy.
And so for me, I look at that as a hybrid model where, you know, and this works for anybody who is, and had an idea. Actually, I'm going to tell you about the idea. You tell me if you think it's a good idea or not, since we're on this topic. So that hybrid model would work for you if you are somebody who doesn't have a lot of time. So you're working a full-time job, you can do the marketing, but you got to get a hold of these people. You got to coordinate this and do this during the day. And you don't have the time. So what you can do is you can find someone else in where you're generating leads and find somebody that it doesn't have to be forever, but find somebody like another wholesaler that's willing to partner up with you on those deals. And you can cut different deals and you could be 40% you, 60% them. You could do 50-50. You know, if you have somebody that is just that's already doing deals and they don't really do any sort of marketing and they don't have the ability to do that, then you're more likely to get a 50-50 split on that. And then what you're doing is you're absorbing the cost. So whatever your costs are for lead generation, that's on you. So you have to kind of manage those numbers. And in the end, now your objective is to generate leads to them, send it to them the way that I would recommend it. We did it a little bit different with you, with Pardo, because Pardo and I are friends, and I know he has his, you know, he has his team and everybody's on the ball. But the way I would do that is I would have either yourself or a VA talk to the seller just to vet the lead and see if it's a legitimate lead. That way, you know upfront if you're generating good leads as opposed to waiting, you know, 30 days when somebody says, oh, these were crappy leads. And you're like, oh, I wish I would have known that now, you know, 30 days ago, because then I would have changed some things. So you talk to the lead. And the way you talk to the lead is not in any way a sales-driven conversation. It's just a very customer service-driven conversation. You can ask them a few questions just to see. And then at that point, then now you can send the lead over to your partner. And then now you can always follow back up with them. Hey, what happened with this lead and that lead, et cetera. So that way you kind of know what's happening and whether or not they're doing a good job with follow-up. But you know you're sending them good stuff. And so if you have a time issue, then this model works great. And then if you have an issue like me where I just don't like, you know, for me, I never like to talk to sellers because I'm just generally not a good salesperson. And I hated making lowball offers. I mean, I'm just a big softy. I didn't like making lowball offers. And then getting somebody else to do that to me was the ideal way to do that. So that's kind of like the motto that I've always done. And I talked to somebody yesterday and they were like, they have their acquisitions people, and then they have another market that they're running with somebody else like this. And I said, if you had to give up one, which one would you give up? And they're like, oh, I give up where I have to hire the acquisitions and do all that, because right now they're not doing their job and I got to be a sales manager. And it's just like, I just hate it. And so then his way of scaling that is he has a guy that right now is doing a 35 deal split, but he has another guy that's coming on board potentially at 40. So he's going to have two markets. And they're good operators. So now he's able to make, you know, he's not going to get the full assignment, but it's like he can make it up in volume, but do it without doing any of that work in the background.
And I'm so glad that you, to me, the words that jumped out at me is good operator. If you're going to approach and work with strategic joint venture partners or marketing partners, it has to be the right operator. Number one, obviously somebody that you can trust. There should be full transparency. Chico, we've done this with you. We've done it with a handful of other people. And through simple automation and Podio, every time one of Chico's leads would come in, it would be shared with Chico and his team. And then they could actually see, you know, they could track the flow of the lead. They could see the comments. They could see the different status changes. So if that kind of overwhelms you in any way or sounds complicated, it could be a simple spreadsheet. Just transparency. It's got to be an operator that either has a team or is just on it. The last thing you want to do is be spending your hard-earned money and then the leads are just kind of sitting there collecting dust, doing nothing. It's all about finding the right operator. But if you're really, really good at marketing, find somebody who's not, but is just a good operator, or vice versa. Maybe you're the operator and you suck at marketing.
Yeah.
Find somebody like a Chico, somebody that's really good at lead gen, and it could make a lot of sense for you.
Well, also too, I mean, it's also what you like to do. So you may not be good at marketing, but you know, the other thing to think about is that if you think about it, like I have a course that teaches people how to wholesale, but you know, you can't put in the course every single scenario that comes up with a deal, because there's just so many of them. And so you only get into, like, when you get into that world, when you're talking to sellers and trying to negotiate a deal and trying to talk to the buyer and everything else, it's a big obstacle course. And so it's a lot to learn. So even if you're not good at marketing, you can always say, you know what, I think I prefer the marketing side of better. So let me get better at that. Let me figure out a way to do that. And then you can find somebody else that you can partner with. And it doesn't mean forever. And, you know, it could be that maybe this is the way for you to get your first couple of deals under your belt, get some money coming in. And then later on, you can decide, you know what, I feel comfortable enough to talk to a few of these people. And you can always do that as well. So for me, I've always done it that way. And there's nothing wrong with the people that want to build a team. But it just depends on how you like to operate. And I'm just a horrible salesperson because I would spend all my day organizing my leads and procrastinating on calling them. So that's my MO. You would fire me if I was your acquisitions person.
Yeah, it wouldn't work out too well, man. But that's kind of an interesting segue into, I think, the last part of our conversation here before we wrap this thing up in a handful of minutes or so is, what are your thoughts on, you know, we just kind of talked about some different models, right? Your one man or one woman show. We talked about the model of like having a team and acquisitions managers and all that. And then we talk about just, you know, maybe getting 50% of a watermelon versus 100% of a grape, right? Where you partner up with the right people. Where do you kind of land on lifestyle business versus scale? Can you have both, or do you feel like you have to choose one or the other? Because the word scale is, as you know, thrown around so much. And I find that many people don't even really know what that means. And then they quickly figure it out when they try to scale.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, right now I'm struggling with that because I want to scale. So I brought on additional team members. And when I say that scale, you know, I have a couple of businesses. I have the real estate deal business and then also the teaching business where I teach people, you know, and I sell courses and I offer coaching and everything else. And so I brought on more overhead and more people. I think that, you know, the biggest challenge I find with that, now, obviously, when you do that, there's always a dip. You always have to go through the dip. In other words, you know, if you're used to making a certain amount of money net to you and you're bringing other people, you're always going to encounter that dip where maybe you're going to make less net for you. But then those other people are going to help and elevate your gross revenue such that then now think you make just as much or more, but then with a lot less problems, right? With a lot less work in your end. I think the thing I struggle with, and this is kind of what I'm struggling with right now, is that the transition of how you have to operate, right? Because if you're used to being solo and you're doing everything yourself, and then now you're transitioning to a team, that's a bit of an adjustment. And one of the things that I wrote down, because I've just been thinking about this, is mistakes. So, you know, one of the things that I think part of the process is when you're scaling and you're getting other people involved in your business, you have to allow others to make mistakes. You have to. So a lot of times you don't want somebody else to help you with something, or you don't want somebody else to do something because you're afraid of making a mistake. And it's kind of like the reverse. The mistakes have to be part of your business now. And then if a mistake ruins your business, then you have other problems, because one single mistake, you know, you should have checks and balances and that sort of thing. But the problem that I have, I don't know if anybody's familiar with a Kobe score. I have my Kobe score is a high fact finder, high follow through, and a one quick start, which means is that I overanalyze everything. I bought a whisk on Amazon, and I can guarantee you it is the highest rated whisk in Amazon. Why? Because I researched it. So my big issue with regards to scale right now is not necessarily the scale, but rather the overthinking. I'm an overthinker, and I get stuck in the weeds and letting things go, and nobody's ever going to do something as detailed as detailed as I do it. Right. So I think it's that. Number one is, the thing I would say about scale is you're going to have a dip in revenue as you go and you increase your size, you know, increase to that next plateau of revenue where now hopefully you'll make just as much, but maybe with less work. You have to change in the way you work inside of the business and allow other people to make mistakes. And so now you become the coach rather than the doer of the thing that you're doing. Yeah, those are the things that I would say right now that are top of mind. But my struggle right now is just letting go. I have to be able to let go, and I'm trying, but it's been a very challenging obstacle.
And no, and man, I really appreciate you just being very honest about that. I think that's something that I've struggled with. A lot of people struggle with. So obviously, you're not on an island by yourself. The question I'd kick back at you is: if you don't change, then what changes?
Like, well, I'm at a point where I'm at a point where the space shuttle has taken off and it's on the way to orbit. So, you know, you can bail if the space shuttle is still on the dock and say, you know what, we're going to pull the plug on this launch. I'm already in the sky. So I can't go back. So it's a bit of a friction point, you know, in terms of, you know, like I have more overhead, but I kind of gotten used to, you know, gotten used to that. Like, okay, I'm okay with the amount of money that I have to bring in every single month just to cover all bases. I'm okay with that. But I'm at a point where if I try to pull back, the spaceship is going to crash, you know? So I have to keep on pushing forward. I think that it's just been a struggle. It have really been this week. It's funny because the last couple of days have been really, really a struggle because I feel like there's a few projects that I've been delaying on and I've been holding the team back just because I'm unwilling to just be looser about things and just allow mistakes to happen. And, you know, just it's just slowing everything to a crawl. So that's my I say that because everybody has their own obstacle. If you're somebody that is just always full of ideas and you don't worry about the details, then maybe you have an easier time because you're like, oh, somebody else is worrying about the I never worry about the details. So that's good. I have somebody else worrying about the details. But for me, it's a little bit, I think, peculiar problem because I worry about all the details.
Well, man, I think a lot of people listening to you right now are going to be able to relate to that. And I heard something, I'll leave you with this and then we'll wrap up the show. I heard something in a mastermind not too long ago. And the gentleman said, as entrepreneurs, we have to get out of the, we have to get out of the way of the current that we create.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
And I really like the way it was phrased and it just, it hit me between the eyes. I'm like, wow, that's really good. As entrepreneurs, we have to get out of the way of the current that we create. So I'll kind of leave you with that and really appreciate you, brother. Well, I know, man, I know you.
I'll leave you with one quote that I heard, and this is the quote that I always think about. This is from Jay Papasan. Is that answer as an the guy who built Keller Williams? He says, as an entrepreneur, you know, your goal should be to expand your opportunity as big as it can, such that other people could achieve their opportunity inside of your opportunity, right? So, you know, to a certain extent. Then I also think of it that way. Like I brought in people recently, you know, Gene, that he came on and now he's helping with a video. And so I'm offering him my my pushing myself to grow bigger gives him another opportunity, gave him an opportunity to do something. So that's another way of looking at it is that, you know, to a certain extent, you know, it's not just also about you. That's not about me. It's about the fact that I've got other people that that want to do better. And if I do better, they do better. And so I think that that to me is, I think, what helps me. Like, you know, there's been a couple of times where I've been, I've been honestly a little bit down this week because of the, you know, progress that I've been making. And I think that the thing that pushes me is thinking about them and thinking like, okay, I'm doing it for me, but I'm also doing it for them.
Yeah. So, I totally get that. Well, man, I know you, dude, you got a big heart. You're in the sky right now, the launch pad. I know you won't crash and burn, man. And you know, there's going to be hiccups along the way, but you'll figure it out, man. And you're going to continue to grow as a person, as an entrepreneur. So, I'm excited to, you know, to be in your corner, dude, and to watch the growth. I got to tell you guys, this is going to sound like a pitch for Chico's courses and products. And it kind of is, but I also genuinely mean it. This dude puts everything into course creation and just giving you the content that you need to thrive in your real estate business. I'm actually going to throw it up. If you guys head over to flipempire.com/leads, Chico has spent, I don't know how much time creating essentially a training, you know, on how to generate leads through Facebook and Instagram so that you can connect with more motivated sellers. Again, that's not the magic unicorn. It's a channel, but it's an effective one if you do it the right way. So, my man, really appreciate you, dude.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You know, when I invited you again, I was like, there's no way Chico's going to want to hop back on the show for like the sixth time. So,
well, you know, sometimes I can't talk to you. So this is the only way for me to talk to you.
That's BS, and we know it, dude. You know it. That's not true.
Oh, no, I know. It's not true. We got to get together. Gene's going to reach out to you so we can do a Miami interview, you and I, for my channel. So
yeah,
we'll make it fun and exciting.
That'll be a lot of fun. Guys, before we wrap up, I want to tease you. Episode 500 is going to be unique. It's going to be different. And I'm going to kind of celebrate a little bit on that show. So thank you for tuning in, for giving us your valuable time. And if you're subscribed to the show, thank you so much. Really, really look forward to bringing you the best guest I possibly can and the highest quality content that can really help you in your life and in your business. So, Chico, my man, you and I will probably talk later today.
Yes.
And I will connect with you all on the next show. Have an amazing day. Hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, you know, I've had a lot of people recently reach out to me wanting to learn more about Ascend, wanting to understand how the mastermind component works, how the coaching relationship works. And so right now we're actually on a waiting list. But what I would encourage you to do is if you think you're the right fit and you think you could benefit, from being a part of our community, head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, watch the short video, and then just click the apply to join button below. And then we'll be in contact with you if and when a spot opens up. So really appreciate you listening to Flip Empire here. And I look forward to connecting with you on the next show. Take care.